Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
And the town lit up.
All right, it's Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN. It's that time of year where we talk about the list of the best and worst of everything in 2017, but it's also a time that we remember and reflect on those familiar faces we lost over the past year. Now, some are very familiar, some you may not know, but wish you had, and joining me live in studio, and this is going to be our sixth year doing this, it is my pal, Wally Pedraza. Good morning, Wally.
Good morning to you.
Now, you know, Tom Petty was one of the big surprises of the year, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, the thing about Tom Petty is I heard you talking earlier about, oh, these are people that are about our age, and so you start being very sensitive to their passing. But Petty was someone who was just wrapping up a tour.
Yeah, I saw him at Summerfest in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and feeling
just wouldn't think of it.
On top of the world,
yeah.
Had plans for what was going to be coming next, what he wanted to do with his group, what he wanted to do in the studio and such. And he's someone, in terms of performance, that was always a joy to see. Because Tom Petty was someone who was, frankly, a fan of the music that he himself was playing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to describe that, yeah.
And he's described, like, for instance, as being a member of the Traveling Wilburys. Part of it was, like, he was a peer with all of those folks. But he was also, every once in a while, say, hey, I'm playing with George Harrison.
Yeah, he was a fan.
He was a fan.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of made it. A double shock for those of us watching. It's like, it was one of ours.
Yeah, you're right. That's what I was going to say. It's very generational. And I'm starting to feel like, and Roger was saying earlier, that there's people from kind of who we grew up with that are starting to pass that you just never expected to be talking about.
David Cassidy.
Yeah.
There's one right there.
Yeah.
He's just a couple of years older than me, or was a couple of years older than me.
Yeah. Well, was he really?
Yeah, he's 67.
Wow. Old.
Well, thank you.
It depends on the perspective.
Yes.
What I've been saying lately is the actuary tables are catching up with us.
Yeah, that's true.
And what makes it so much fun, actually, to do what we do every year increasingly is to say, it's sad that we've lost them, but let's remember why they were special in the first place.
True. So true.
And so that's why I mentioned Petty. And Cassidy, for instance, he was a genuine musical performer. He was on this obscure little show, Partridge Family, and his stepmom was also on it. So you had this mother and stepson singing stage, and it was a feel-good show.
He was bigger, though, than the show itself.
Oh, yes.
He became a teen idol, with the girls.
But, I mean, his concerts sold out. They blew away the Beatles and the Rolling Stones at the time. I mean, the David Cassidy concerts were huge, and people were injured and hurt, obviously, at a lot of these things, too, because they were trampled upon because there were so many people there.
And then he continued a career. Now, what happens with so many people who have the time in the spotlight? I mean, when they're number one of the number ones.
Sure.
And then they step back and find the niche that they like, whether it be producing or playing in smaller venues, but playing to the people who want to hear them. And that, I think, I've started calling that the victory lap tours.
Sure.
Where it's like, we didn't lose these people yet.
But
someone like a Bob Dylan touring would go, I want to see him. But Petty would be someone who I think was on a victory lap with looking forward.
Absolutely. To more. Absolutely.
Yeah.
To more behind that.
Yeah.
We're breaking this down more. We're going to start with really the big names.
Yeah.
Then we're going to go to television and movies and theater and all kinds of other good things. But my David Cassidy story before we go to break here is, I had him scheduled for an interview a couple of years ago, and for a pre-tape. And so I remember coming to the station and putting him on, and I could tell in the first few minutes of the interview, and I've never told the story on the air, that he wasn't all right. You know, whatever it was, you call it tired, call it he was drinking. I don't know. I don't know. But he was not all there. And it's one of only two interviews in the 6 years I've been doing this here that I stopped within the first maybe 10 minutes because I felt bad that I could not put this on the air, like I was going to embarrass this guy. And I remember calling his manager, his publicity person afterwards and saying, "How don't you screen?" Like, we knew he had issues because it was in the press, the DUIs and all that stuff. But it's like, I felt like they were just throwing him out there anyway for cash sake. And I thought, you know, aren't you watching this guy? Aren't you, you know, making sure he's okay? Are you calling him in the morning before he does an interview to make sure he, I ripped this publicity person a new one. And they apologized profusely. But, you know, Bill and Wendy had him on, I think, you know, months later. And he was okay. But he was a little down in the conversation because I think a lot was happening, divorce and bankruptcy and all that other good stuff. So at the end, it was a little tough. But, I mean, this was a big superstar, you know.
And I know you also, I think this year, interviewed Rosemarie, I think.
Rosemarie.
Yeah, and that would be like.
Still alive, by the way. Just let's make that clear.
Oh, right.
Your death. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
But I want to hold that as a contrast because I also had the opportunity to interview her as well by phone and all. And it's like, wow, talk about someone who's absolutely on top of things.
Oh.
Talk about, I mean.
Ridiculously.
Step back and let her talk.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, she's going to talk
anyway.
Always
hello and we're going to break. I mean, she really had amazing, amazing stories. I just steered them a little bit. But
yeah.
Man, 94 years old, and now she's got that new movie out.
Yeah.
That talks about her life. That
And she's actually touring with it.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of cases she's touring, and then sometimes she's doing it by phone, but she's participating in almost every opening, which is very cool.
All right, we'll be right back.
I thought we'd play a little David Cassidy since we talked about him, but that was the first. That was actually one of two themes. The first theme was not "Come on, get happy." It was traveling along. What was it? It was another version of the song.
The first one,
yeah, find like it, Curtis.
Season?
It was from the first season. It was he explained the story about how the band got together.
Mm-hmm.
Are you finding it? The first season theme for Partridge Family. It was about. Oh man, I can't think of it now. But it was about how the band was formed and how they got together on the bus. And mom came aboard, and Ruben sold our songs. It was like this whole story. You got it? Let's listen to it.
Sorry about that. I think it's When We're Singing.
Yeah, When
that's
We're Singing. That's what it is.
Coming up here. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You gonna play it?
You gotta get past that ad.
And, we might have to wait for the ad. So if you want to keep talking, I can
get
you.
Tell me when you're ready. Tell me when you're ready. But yeah, because a lot of the shows back then, especially in the first season, they would play the story. They would actually tell the story so that people would get interested in the show, right?
Well,
right.
And recall, Happy Days did a flip where it started with Rock Around the Clock, and then they had the Happy Days theme.
But even like I Dream a Genie, they would explain how the bottle was found for the first half dozen episodes or whatever.
Well, even the opening on The Partridge Family was different that first season than it was in the following.
Yeah, here it is.
Come on now and meet everybody and hear us singing. There's nothing better than being together when we're singing. Music would pay. Daddy got Ruben to sell our song, and it really came together when Mom sang along. Come on now and meet.
Yeah, so that's a little bit different.
Yeah,
but you know
way
what?
Different.
But it was only David and Shirley, and then it was the studio singers, like that did Happy Days and all that other stuff.
Well, which is fine actually, because you're watching a TV sitcom.
Yeah,
and. Of course, that's the classic example of, okay, where's the elevator speech? Okay, that's it. You don't need to see any other episode.
Yeah.
You don't need to see anything before or after. Tune in And there you are. You're happy.
So, you know, one of the big names of the year that really, like, I have friends that, you know Jeff Hoover from the Morning News. He's the guy that actually introduced me to Don Rickles and his mm-hmm. manager and stuff some years ago. But for him, it was Jerry Lewis.
Oh,
that
sure.
was his big idol. But Don, you know, that was one that I was sincerely, like, heartbroken about because I got to meet this guy. I got to spend time with this guy. And, like, people were calling me the day he passed away, and we all
consoling
came, you? Yeah, consoling, yeah. And we did Bill Left's show. It was Rich Coase, it was Hoover, it was Jim mm-hmm. Roach. We all came down here to talk about it, and we were all in the green room like it was the back of a funeral home. Like, we were all hugging each other. It was pretty wild.
Now, it wasn't a surprise that he passed, obviously.
Well, I knew he was not, you know, by talking to Tony Opetisano, who's his manager, I knew going into the spring that Don was having a bit of a hard time. You know, he was in the midst of taping this last little Dinner with Don thing, and mm-hmm. he was struggling through it. And I remember telling him, but he kind of kept it in distance a little bit. But yeah, I was shocked that he passed away. But what a comic genius. And from a guy that started off really working in strip clubs, in nightclubs, I mean, he made quite a career for himself through The Tonight Show and Letterman and all, and making all those runs. And all those sitcoms he was on in the 60s, right?
Now let me ask you, where was your first impression of Don Rickles? Was it, because for me it was on Record, you know, his Hello Dummy. Hello Dummy. Mm. And I was just like, wow, I mean, you can say that?
I'm going to say probably 8 or 10 years old, if I was sneaking around watching The Tonight Show while mm-hmm. my parents thought I was sleeping, mm-hmm. it was watching Don in maybe the mid-70s. And then I got The Tonight Show 15th or 10th anniversary album. It was a double album
that came out, right?
And Rickles was on there. And so I kind of got a little Rickles hungry on some of that. But then I remember, as I got to know him, he was on Genie, the Addams Family, the Monsters.
Oh, sure.
He was on
movies.
Yeah, movies, of course. I didn't discover those
Muscle
until
Beach Party?
Yeah, but that and Kelly's Heroes and all that.
Right.
I didn't really discover that till like maybe the 90s or 2000s even.
Yeah.
But he was always so sweet. And I've seen him probably about 15 or 16 times in concert, whether it was Vegas or Chicago. The first time I saw him was, it was a fundraiser in Rosemont for Governor Edgar. That's how long it was ago. And my dad was very involved in politics, and he said, you want to go? And it was a very small group, maybe a couple hundred people, and he just did his shtick for an hour and a half. And it was awesome. I was hooked. So when I got an opportunity to see him at the Horseshoe, or was it up in Milwaukee or at Vegas, I went and saw him a bunch of times and then got to meet him. And it was at a time where he wasn't really doing radio interviews anymore. And he said he didn't like doing phoners, just from a hearing standpoint, just didn't want to do them. And I got to know his manager very well. And he said, look, why don't you come out to Vegas and talk to Don for his 90th birthday? And so I flew out Bennett Wake Knight, who was my producer at the time. And we went and we sat backstage with him. And he's always in a robe. And that's his thing backstage. You know, hopefully keeps his legs closed, because I believe that's all it was his tuxedo shirt, his bow tie, and his in his robe. And that's what Tony said. He said, you know, just, you might get a show, just to let you know when he comes out of here. So came out sweet as can be, and remembered me, you know, and immediately, you know, asked for vodka, because that's what he, a little bit before the show and a little bit after the show. And then, you know, what do you drink? You drink vodka? No, I don't drink vodka. I drink bourbon, but I'm okay. I want to be okay for this interview. He goes, no, Tony, go get him. What kind of, blah, 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 blah. So we did the whole interview. And then he said, and we're in Vegas now, and he's, you know, probably 40 minutes before I'm going on. And I said, thanks again. You know, this has really been fabulous. And then his wife came down and talked to her a little bit. And I said, well, we're sitting almost in the front row and blah, 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 blah. He said, you're sitting in the front row. He goes, I said, well, when we got the tickets, I said, you bought tickets? He goes, you know us. You don't buy tickets to the show anymore. Where's your tickets? He snatches them out of my hand, calls for some woman. She comes, grabs my tickets, put that on whatever card he paid for it on, whatever. He goes, I got you in the box over there with Terry Fader, the big.
He won America's Talent show. He's the ventriloquist.
But he's worth hundreds of millions now. This guy in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
And so
he's got his own showroom.
Yeah, he's got his own showroom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So so we're sitting in the showroom, and about three quarters of the way through the show, he said, I got a very good friend in Vegas with me here tonight. He's from WGN Radio in Chicago. Everybody turn around, take a look, and the spotlight goes on to this booth that he's got us at. And I'm thinking, are you freaking kidding me? He's in Vegas, and I'm nobody, and everyone's kind of like, nobody really knows who I am. It was pretty fun. But always a sweet and generous man, and always behind the scenes, before you left the room, he would say, keep my name alive. That's what he, no matter when I saw him, talked to him, interviewed, backstage, whatever, he'd grab your hand and say, keep my name alive. So that's what we're doing here tonight.
Exactly. One impression, just one of the things that struck me about him as a performer is that he was someone who could get a Frank Sinatra, for instance, to say, oh, yes, Don. He was the one who did what we all wanted to be able to do,
yeah,
which is feel comfortable in the presence of royalty.
He could break anybody down.
Exactly.
Let's take a little listen, just a little bit of my interview that I did. It was a couple years ago with Don talking about one of my favorite Sinatra stories.
Well, with Sinatra, you know, when Frank was on the show, and he didn't make a lot of appearances on The Tonight Show, but then you walked out on stage.
It's on the film, in the show here tonight.
One of my favorite moments of all time. Share with us that story that Frank told about you. You weren't married to Barbara yet. You were dating a pretty girl, and you walked over to Frank's table.
It's funny you should say that, because the wife said to me upstairs, Don, stop telling that story.
Best story.
Everybody
in
the world, newspaper people, everybody picked up on that story. One guy, it happened in Shanghai. One guy said it happened in China. One guy said it happened in North Korea. I mean, from a little story like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's true. The punchline is, you know, it's with this girl, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to score with her, and he was in the coat in the sands in the lounge. I went over and said, call me Bullet. I said, Frank, he said, what is Bullet? I said, if you could come over and help me out with the girl, blah, 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 blah. Well, okay, not right away, but I said, don't worry, Alan. Okay. And so I sat down, and she said, do you know Frank Sinatra? I said, oh, sweetheart, come on. And sure enough, she was getting all supports there. He came over and said, hey, Don, how are you? And I said, hey, Frank, can't you see I'm eating? fell out living. Then he had the security cops, which nobody even knew, pick me up and carry me out.
And Frank said he stood there with his mouth open and like walked away like, what was that? You know, but he could do that to anybody, which was cool.
Can we use Sinatra as a transition to Jerry Lewis?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Jerry Lewis obviously has many hats that he wore over the decades, but I think for a generation, he was the host of a telethon.
Yeah, right. No, that's true.
And that's fine.
And in the later years, the host of a bad telethon.
Well, yeah, it's an oxymoron.
Yeah.
But there was a moment, knowing Jerry Lewis's history, of course, he started out as part of Martin and Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
They were on the first Ed Sullivan show way back in the 40s.
Sure.
And they were absolutely hot act. And then they split. And it was, let's say it wasn't a totally amicable split.
No. And it was uncomfortable for people to watch and know that that was happening until they reunited briefly.
Briefly.
In the mid-70s.
And they were on a telethon. And Sinatra brought Dean out.
Sinatra again, yeah.
And that was just one of those... He could get away with doing that and put the two on the stage together.
But if you watch, like, even I'll show my kids some Jerry Lewis movies. I mean, they love the Jim Carreys and everything else. Yeah. But when you take them back to the original, I love everything. You know, as much as I love the Nutty Professor, I think Cinderfella is probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
You're probably the only other person.
Nope.
Cinderfella. I haven't anyone mentioned that in ages.
It's one of my favorites. And my daughter loves that movie, too, because it's the kind of the story, right?
And did you tell me, or did I read it somewhere, when he did the dance up down the stairs, he was sick as all get out on
that
day?
Yeah, we talked about that when he died. Yeah.
And he just performed like, but it was all his.
Yeah.
He owned everything. He was the producer, the director. He owned the movie. He was the star of the movie.
Yeah.
His stuff is classic. Three on a Couch? I think A Visit to a Small Planet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These are some of the lesser known Jerry Lewis ones that were awesome.
Yeah.
Now, and I want to jump one more thing for Cinderfella. Is this isn't in the movie, but it was in the trailer promoting the movie, and he's there looking at someone putting the marquee lettering up on the theater, and they misspelled it, and they had Cinderella. He says, "No, no, that's the wrong letter. You've awesome. Got to put that in."
I love
in.
That. I love that. I love that. We, I met him years ago with Dean when he was playing at the Arcata Theater, which was very cool. It was just kind of a one man show. He's a little curmudgeon-y at that time, but it was fun to watch him and tell stories and show clips and stuff. We tried to get him. Remember, Roger? We've been talking about that for a long time.
Long time.
It was about a year that we worked with his son. And try to get it. We just could not do it. And in some of his interviews.
And he only did a few interviews in that time period.
Well, I knew I was going to have to find
some were
to
horrible and some were pretty good. He actually did one with some host of a had done talk interviews, and he was awesome.
Yeah, you know
it.
Why? Because he knew what he was talking about
right,
when he interviewed
the
Jerry. He did his homework,
right.
And he respected who Jerry was. The other guy from, I think it was the Hollywood Reporter Variety, came in.
Horrible questions.
And generic questions, like he just barely looked them up on Wikipedia, and Jerry picked it up at 90-whatever years old like that and already cut him off from the beginning of the interview.
Yeah.
Yes, no, we're done here. You know, so, but a legend in that.
Yeah. So, another name we're keeping alive.
Yes, that's another name we're keeping alive. Mary Tyler Moore.
Mary Tyler Moore, I think we've talked about how I teach at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and young women there know Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
Respect her for what she did on the Mary Tyler Moore show, the fact that she was in the head of a production company, MTM Enterprises.
MTM,
and then, of course, I would have to push them back to the Dick Van Dyke Show to say, oh, and she did something before
people sometimes
that too.
Don't connect that's the same woman, by the way.
Yeah. And it was just one of those seminal figures that if she did nothing else apart from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, it was enough.
Right.
But instead, she also did additional movies. She did additional series and such.
She was the hot point girl. In the 1950s, right?
Going backwards again.
Way. But she was 23 when she started the Dick Van Dyke Show. And I know, and I watched an interview recently with Dick and Mary. Maybe it was done in the early 2000s when they got together talking about their chemistry and the fact that they really did have crushes on each other. But they were like 10 years apart, I think. Weren't they? Yeah.
I mean, she was the youngster.
Yeah.
So and
groundbreaking on television, too. She was one of the first women to wear pants. The capris.
Which sounds like so, but so was a big deal.
They only allowed her, like they said to Jeannie, you got to cover up the belly button. You can't show that. And it would sneak out once in a while. They told her with the capri pants, you could only wear them in one scene in an episode. And they had to make her loosen up her pants because there was too much cupping, Carl Reiner would always tell me. That the ridiculous meetings he would have with CBS executives was outrageous. But absolute legend. She had a variety show for a little bit, too. She kind of discovered Michael Keaton and David Letterman kind of brought him out, right?
Yeah, and in fact, at her passing, they were digging out some clips from the variety show just to see the people that... 'Cause she said, all right, I can do anything I want. I want to do a variety show.
Yeah.
And the fact that it wasn't hugely successful was sort of irrelevant because it was, we'll indulge it.
And her last appearance, I think, was on Hot in Cleveland with Betty White. And
wouldn't
some
surprise
of the
me.
Yeah, it was one of the last ones. But at that point, she couldn't even see, I think, at the point. So diabetes really took hold of her.
She also had another show that I kind of found on YouTube, just searching around and stuff.
Yeah.
After Mary Tyler Moore show, she was an executive.
Yeah, it was called Mary.
In like an advertising company or a marketing company.
Was that the Annie McGuire show?
I think so, and it only lasted about maybe 8 episodes.
Katie Sagal was on there for Married with Children. She was her assistant or something.
It didn't last long at all.
No, did not. But, I mean, most successes in there. Yeah. Adam West.
Adam West, what's marvelous about Adam West, when I was looking at, first of all, he was Batman.
Yeah.
He was the only Batman we care about.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. My 5-year-old, that's Batman to him.
Yeah. And what was delightful is that he was able to go back to the Batman role multiple times through animation.
Yes.
And
one bad mid-70s live performance. Did you ever see that?
No, I didn't.
It was a superheroes. It was Legend of the Superheroes.
Oh, I saw that listed. Okay.
It was very poorly. If you ever saw the Star Wars Christmas special they did,
yes.
How horrible that is with Harvey Korman.
It's the same spirit?
It's the same spirit of that. he was awful, but it was cool to see him dressed up again. But what was a great role for him also was a curse for him.
Sure. But in fact, he often would play off of that. For instance, when he was on Family Guy, I mean, it was just like making fun of the straight laced. I mean, I'm not really straight laced. Yeah. And he was also on some adultish films on cable, where again he wasn't doing anything untoward, but it was just he's in this environment because it's the polar opposite of what the straight laced Batman would do.
I'm thinking of who's the producer of Family Guy.
Seth MacFarlane.
Seth MacFarlane. So when I had Seth on about a year ago, I talked to him a little bit off air about, hey, you know, I love how much you use Adam West on the show. And both Adam told me off air and Seth separately told me that Seth really paid him a lot of money to do that because he did not make a lot of money in the last two or three decades. He, you know, some residuals from the show, and he was so typecast that it was hard for him.
Oh, yeah. You're never going to see him as a straight drama lead.
What early movie before Batman is he known for?
The Forbidden Planet?
Outlaws is coming with the Three Stooges.
Yes.
The new Three Stooges, but, whatever you want to call it, Curly Joe.
But he also did a lot of earlier...
yes, he did. Westerns. He did a lot of TV.
But he also did...
a lot of TV series.
Detective stuff. I think he was in an episode of Mr. Lucky. But he did a lot of that, but he wasn't like the star then.
He was a B or C grade character.
If you get the DVD version of The Return of the Caped Crusaders, which was the latest animation full-length...
The second one.
And then there's another one, Batman versus Two-Face.
Yes.
But in any case, look at the bonus features.
Okay,
What they do is they show him recording in studio. So it's let's see how he handles performing his character as a radio performer would back in the 30s and 40s. And he does it spot on.
He does. He absolutely does. It was maybe three years ago when I first met him in person. He looked great. He was always suntan, relaxed, and so forth. But a really nice guy, and always very generous with his time because I've had him on a couple times. Hugh Hefner.
Oh, I guess you might say a
big ties to Chicago too.
Yeah, huge ties with Chicago, and the idea of I have a dream. And so I'm just going to follow it through the 50s into practically now.
And some early experimental television in the beginning.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for footage of Harry Nilsson, who never did live performances, he was at Playboy After Dark.
Yeah.
So Hugh Hefner made... not only the art of the nude, but he actually had good articles. I actually read Playboy for the articles.
Yeah, there was good. There was good content in there.
Could you say that he defined a generation?
Yeah, I would say so.
Well, he certainly defined the aspirations of a generation. Yeah.
Did you? I mean, that's the impact. Did you work for Playboy?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, you did. What did you
do? I worked at
photographer.
I don't know if I talked with you about it, but. One of my former students from Evanston High School helped curate his personal collections of things at the home, at the mansion. And I can't remember whose show we were trying to get her on, someone's show. It might have been Patty's show, but we could try to get her for years. But I did work for, when I was going to college in the early 70s, I worked at the Playboy Hotel. This is after they moved everything over to the Palmolive Building, and the Knickerbocker Hotel became the Playboy Hotel.
Yep.
So I worked there on and off during all my breaks. I first worked over at the club and for one break, and then worked the front desk of the hotel, and many stories from that. But never did meet him, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just some great stories from those days.
Curtis reminding me that I have a little Adam West. I know it's the top of the hour, but we're going to play just a little bit of this. I talked to Adam a couple years ago just about the role of playing Batman and how he wanted to be remembered.
Who decided to play the role of Batman in the series itself a little campier? Was it yourself? Was it William Dozier? Was it kind of a group decision that this is where we were going to take this series?
Well, we shaped the show as a social satire and a tongue-in-cheek comedy, really, for adults. And not for children, you know, they could enjoy all that other stuff. But as you got older, you caught the references and the gags. And I think it was Lorenzo Semple Jr. who wrote those first scripts, and our late executive producer, Bill Dozier, and myself. And we just got together and decided on a tone for the show.
Now, you did the pilot with Frank Gorshin as the Riddler, one of the first villains we'll talk about. Did some of the fans, when the series first came out, did they expect it to be more serious, like Superman and the Lone Ranger, than what was portrayed?
Well, I think it probably did. And among certain people at the studio who didn't understand
right.
what we were doing.
Right.
And it took, several months of just doing our thing to convince them.
Now, the show I know was going to be an hour-long show, but it was decided to split it up into two nights as a cliffhanger, which I don't think anyone has done even since then with a television series. It kind of brought back the old movie serials of, you know, you were kind of at the edge of your seat, and you didn't have to wait a whole week to get the ending.
Yeah, that was the homage to DC Comics and, the old comic books.
People watching the show, Adam, you know, they all wanted to ride in your Batmobile. They all wanted to slide down the pole from the library to the cave. It was every kid's dream that watched you on the show. And you had an amazing group of people that you got to work with as well. I know you've had a great friendship with Burt Ward over the years. He was a great on-air companion, wasn't he?
He really was. He got it from the beginning. And he had this wonderful energy and curiosity and kind of excitement about him in the role, and it worked. Well, David, thank you very much. I mean, you've been remarkable in your observations. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you again.
You bet, David. You too.
Let's go to break. We'll be right back on 720 WGN.
Jets in an open sky, a streak of gray and a cheerful...
A loop, a whirl, and a vertical climb, and once again, you'll know it's time for the adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle and friends.
Starring that supersonic speedster, Rocket J. Squirrel, with his pal Bullwinkle the Moose, and a host of others.
All right, tape player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Wally Podrazik about those we lost in 2017. The voice of Rocky and so many,
and so,
hundreds of voices,
yes.
Until recently even, June
yes.
Foray.
Yes, and the Rocky show, and her career started way back in radio,
yeah.
Which is a natural for someone.
Well, she was 101 when she passed. She was older.
And yeah. So basically, in television, what animated cartoons allowed was radio to come to TV.
Right.
And she could do the voices. And you'll correct me if I've misstated
I'm checking
anything.
Your notes right now.
So it'd be like Betty Rubble.
Yeah.
Granny on Tweety and Sylvester.
Yes, I know, right? Classic. Yeah.
And of course, Rocky. And it's one of those voices that you instantly recognize.
She was the witch, too. That one? Okay.
And when you met her,
yeah,
because she came out for a film festival years ago. And
oh, that's cool.
And as a matter of fact, I think the Chicago cinema was a little disappointed that their most popular offering of the finest in the International Film Festival was Rocky and Bullwinkle's voices.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But of course it is, because those are the ones that connect with you on television, and then go to cinema and go to radio and go to all the places that voices alone can take you.
Her last gig was on the Looney Tunes show, which is on, I think, Cartoon Network, that mm-hmm. my son still watches, but it was produced through 2016, and it was still her voice.
Oh, sure.
Doing so many, Granny.
Yeah, because, right, I was looking down the checklist, yeah, said, yeah, yeah, Granny, in all these appearances.
So in television, a couple others are Money Hall.
Exactly, the man who not only got people wondering if they should keep the prize or trade it out for something else. Yeah. But he actually created something, led to the study of the Monty Hall problem, which was if you have the three big prizes and you know the results of one of the curtains, what is your decision? Based on mathematics, based on logic.
Oh,
and
that's
all.
Wild.
Frankly, it's just an excuse to relish Monty Hall. He did a wonderful job as being the meister of that.
Some of the other names on here, Mike Connors, Mannix.
A great detective show.
It was. Even as a kid, I liked that. Right before The Rockford Files, I liked that show.
It had a style to it.
It did.
Anchored by him.
Robert Guillaume.
Robert Guillaume, one of my favorites, Benson on Soap, and then later that he was such a strong character that he had his own spinoff, and rich career in terms of he was in the all black version of Guys and Dolls that played on Broadway.
Also, he starred in the TV show about the sports. It was like ESPN.
Sports Night.
Yeah, he was awesome in that.
And he explained when he came to Benson that he took what would have been the cliche role of black performers in the 60s, you know, the domestic. And he was absolutely the smartest, funniest character on the entire series.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. Bill Paxton, kind of a shocker, young. Twister is what I, and Titanic is what I.
True Lies, Terminator, and.
But most recently, a successful drama. He was on television.
And he was in Big Love and the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Right, that's right.
And
Martin Landau, Judge Wapner from People's Court, the original. He was almost 100, I think, when he passed.
Yeah, and he decided, hey, I'm retired. Let me keep doing it.
But yeah,
for
right.
A wider
I love
audience.
That. For lots of money. Yes. Aaron Moran, Joni from Happy Days.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the sadness of that.
So,
And it was from throat cancer, and so people are talking about
other struggles she had, and it wasn't true.
Yeah.
Shelley Berman, legend in comedy in general.
From Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what do we know him for? Well, we know him for, amongst other things, being on Larry David's show.
Yes, he was Larry David's dad, which was classic. But an absolute legendary comedian, Harry Dean Stanton, who I believe was also on Big Love.
He was also in Big Love. And actually,
so many others, of course.
Yeah, well, and he was also in the Twin Peaks revival. So,
that's right, okay. So more recently.
Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, that's right, Richard Hatch. Yep. Mm-hmm. John Hurd. Was another John Hurt also.
Well, actually, that was a particular frustration for me because I would always phonetically get John Hurd and John Hurt mixed up, and they both die in the same year.
I know, they did.
So John Hurd you'd know from Home Alone, Home Alone 2, and he was also...
He had the Sopranos, too.
Yeah, he had a great role on The Sopranos of someone who showed how Tony could manipulate people to get what he wants, and he was the victim of that. John Hurt is the British one who received an Academy Award nomination for Midnight Express, was in Alien, Harry Potter films.
And he played one of the doctors of Doctor Who.
He played the War Doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, do I see some Doctor Who geeking going on here?
Oh, yes, you do.
That's awesome.
I can't wait for the Christmas special.
Barbara Hale. Perry Mason.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And with the revival of Perry Mason, she came along with Raymond Burr, and William Catt came along with both of them.
Which is so cool.
Her son. So.
And still one of the most, I think it's run twice a day on MeTV, and it's one of their highest rated shows. That and there's a Western that's also Chuck Connors, Rifleman.
Oh, Rifleman. Sure.
The two biggest shows on that network. Still, big ratings.
Because what they both of them demonstrate is we know what we're doing it well, and you like what we're doing, and you keep tuning in.
Stephen Furst.
He's someone that people mostly know from Animal House, but I know him from Saint Elsewhere.
Yeah, Saint Elsewhere, of course.
I love that.
Powers Booth?
Oh, that's right. Deadwood was his last deal. If you've seen Deadwood on HBO, that was still one of my favorites.
Wasn't he on Nashville?
He was.
Yeah.
Recently on Nashville, yeah.
Yeah.
Other people just in television and movies. George Romero, director of George Romero, Night of the Living Dead. Roger Ailes, Fox News chairman, was a big one as well. Jay Thomas was another one that I noted because around Christmas time, he always used to be on Letterman.
Oh, do the Letterman tale.
And he was on Cheers. He was Carla's husband.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
He was also in Mork and Mindy.
Oh,
he owned he and the
pizza
the,
place or what was
he
it?
Owned the deli.
Mm-hmm. Deli, okay.
Yeah.
All right. In the world of music, we talked about Tom Petty, Glenn Campbell.
Yeah.
Wow. Glenn Campbell, I saw him.
But you knew he was sick for so long.
Yeah.
And then he went out on that tour that became the subject of the documentary. That one hit hard because you knew it was coming.
It was Alzheimer's, and it was and it happened quickly.
Yeah, but I saw him about 10 years ago. So, I mean, he already knew that.
I'm going to have a chocolate that Chris came in with. So
okay. I saw him at the Hollywood Bowl back in the early 2000s. And great show. I mean, but even then, there was a little edge. Is he okay? Yes, he's okay.
Oh, really?
He's doing well. He's doing fine. But already there was, you know, he's got to tread cautiously.
He was a Summer Replacement series. It was a good time hour.
That's right.
Yes.
Maybe for Carol Burnett. I can't remember what it was. But
Actually, the Smothers Brothers
That's what it was.
Yes. Smothers show.
Yes, it was. It was absolutely that. Let's see who else. Jim Nabors, we talked about.
You forgot Roger Moore.
Oh, on movies? Oh, Roger Moore. That's
or have we not gone to movies yet?
Well, you can say The Saint, and then you've made a jump to TV to movies.
Although he was a good 007. I'm still going to rank the original Sean Connery.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And the most recent.
Daniel Craig
in that category. We talked again about Al Jarreau, another one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But Jim Nabors, I mean, such a diverse talent. And, you know, people don't know that he was – one of his big claims to fame wasn't just Andy Griffith and Gomer Pyle. It was obviously his singing voice. It was also being the first guest of every season of the Carol Burnett Show.
Mm-hmm.
So he was – that was a staple that he was the first guest and very, very good friends with Carol. But he was also – he also sang back home in Indiana at every Indianapolis 500 until I think 2 years ago.
It was that, about – Yeah, it was about 2 years ago, and then Straight No Chaser took over for him.
Yeah, and now it's a tradition that they're having different people do it, I think,
every year
forward
now.
Yeah, but
okay.
That was his big thing, was he opened the Indianapolis 500 for decades.
And the thing about Jim Nabors is he's from an era in which people would have musical variety shows, and they would have musical variety shows.
Yeah.
And they would cover the latest tunes. Something circulating on YouTube was his cover version of a Michael Nesmith song called Listen to the Band.
Yeah.
And it riffs at the end.
I saw it on YouTube, yeah.
And it riffs at the end with the Sgt. Pepper reprise. They have a little bit
That's
of Sgt.
Crazy.
Pepper orchestration. So that was music was everywhere. And you can do it on TV and have an hour-long primetime variety show. Yeah.
Two 1950s legends, Chuck Berry and Fats Domino.
Yeah,
you know, when they, what do we send out in space to help define who we are?
Yeah.
Chuck Berry,
yeah.
Mel Tillis.
The there was a lot of countryside. Yeah, there was was it George Thorogood also? I can't remember who else was, no, not George. I don't want to kill people. But
yeah, don't kill. Yeah, we've done that before. If it's not in the notes.
Yeah. No, he's still alive. He's still alive and well. He's doing very well. He's got a new album coming out.
Good. Good job, David. You resuscitated.
Malcolm Young from AC/DC. He was one of the co-founders, of course, of AC/DC. Chris Cornell, Soundgarden, at a very young age as well. You have a name on here.
That probably said, who? Pete Shotten, right?
Pete Shotten
was a childhood buddy of John Lennon's.
Okay.
And so when Lennon started ascending to the heights of Beatledom, at one point in the late 60s, early 70s, he said, let me help my buddy out. And so Shotten was like a gopher for Lennon. And I think they bought him a grocery store or something. And he did that for a while and said, you know, I got to go off and do my own stuff. But thank you, John, for it. And he told his memories of Lennon in a book, The Beatles, John Lennon and Me. And it was a very affectionate look back.
That's very cool.
And so it was just, and I was on a panel with him once. That was one of those personal, like, oh, gee, Pete's gone.
That's cool. Well, you've written so many books on the Beatles as well. Jay Giles was another one.
Yeah.
That happened a little bit earlier in the year.
The lead singer to Linkin Park was found dead. Chester Bennington, 41 years old.
Wow.
And you see, those are the ones that kind of throw you off.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, if someone is 90, you wish you would stay around to be 100, but that's understandable. But when you get in the 40s and 50s, it's just upsetting.
I'm trying to look at some of the other people we lost this year in music. There was somebody else I'm thinking of, and I can't remember who.
Greg Allman.
Greg Allman.
Yeah. You got to mention.
That's
that.
A legend. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like oh.
He obviously became very well known. Married to Cher for a very short period of time, obviously, and all that.
Or Cher became very well known because of that.
That could be.
Probably
that could
not.
That could be. Let's see who else was in here. I'm sorry. I had it up on my. On my page here.
Are you looking at music or just...
Yeah,
well, also
a couple of astronauts passed away.
Yeah, tell me.
Cernan.
Yeah, that's right, Gene Cernan, which Triton College, it's named after him.
Oh, that's right.
He's the Cernan Space Center. Yep. Yeah. Politics and News, Dick Gregory.
Yeah, I wanted to make... Because I saw him do a stand-up bit years ago, and he was, till the very end, an activist comedian. And he had that... I'm going to make you laugh. I'm going to talk about issues, but I'm going to talk about issues. And he was very serious about that. And he also regularly did a hunger strike for some. He didn't stop eating, but he would be on a liquid diet and all.
Okay.
And so when I saw him in a nightclub once, it was one of those dine-out nightclubs, and he takes this big glass of milkshake, I guess, and pardon me while I have my dinner. And then he made that part of the act.
That's awesome.
No, he was from Chicago? Wasn't Dick Gregory from Chicago? I believe.
Was he?
Let me look it up.
All right, you look that up. Okay. Speaking of Chicago, Jerry Krause. Mm-hmm. Of the Chicago Bulls. Obviously, you know, not only was he a GM and so forth and a big part of that team, but he also was part of the Baltimore Bullets as well very early on in his career.
Oh, you keep forgetting that people have these different identities. Management, they were on the
That's
field,
right.
so
they
to
They were
speak,
out there.
On
yep.
the court.
Yeah,
they
he
were
was
from St. Louis.
Yeah, okay.
Louis. But I do remember Midwest. That before, back in the late 60s, during all the anti-war protests and stuff, he did an appearance at SIU Carbondale that was widely publicized. So,
and he also did a Dick Gregory at Kent State after the Kent State shootings.
After the shootings, yeah.
I'm going to flash back a little bit to two interviews we talked about earlier because we've got some audio on that now. We were talking about Don Rickles and Adam West. Don Rickles had talked to me about Casino because Don was so obviously tied into Vegas in the 1960s. And when Martin Scorsese said, Don, you alone, your presence will help bring us back to that time. We want you in the movie. Don was so flattered and, of course, did it. Let's take a little listen.
Oh, with Robert De Niro and Sharon Stone, that was a favorite. I mean, you must have loved that because you really were, you represented Vegas in one of the biggest movies.
It's funny you should say it because, Martin, there was really no part for me. And Scorsese called me and said, you're going to be Billy Sherbet. And he sent me a script. I said, there's no Billy Sherbet in it. He said, don't worry about it. You're in the movie. And he put me in the thing. He said, because your image represents what I want to sell. And so I was part of that movie. And we had a good time doing it, you know. And my experience was always De Niro. And first time I worked with him, he said, you know, Bob's very serious. Don't kid around, blah, blah, blah. And I met him at his house because he was doing Cape Fear. They had the hair.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I went on the first scene, walking down there. At night for night, shooting was tough in those days.
Bet.
In a casino at the Riviera. And I walked down and he said, Roland. And Bob went, yeah, so I took the gun and I said to the guy, you know, where's the gun? And I said, I can't, Marty. I can't work with this man. He's a mumbler.
He was there when the mob ran Vegas. He was caught just to the Rat Pack. And yes, he knew Sinatra, and he managed to say it in every sentence he ever said. Yeah, I knew Frank. Frank loved me. There was Frank in my front row. Frank always came to see me. I told Frank this. I told Frank that. I'm so sick of hearing about Frank Sinatra. Enough already. It made me want to tell Frank to go himself. I mean, I don't know how to tell you this, Don, but Frank is dead. Coincidentally, dead is also the average age of your fans.
Which is awesome. I mean, I love Don. And anything, I know that if I need a little pick-me-up, I will just find some YouTube, some Don on YouTube, which is always so classic.
You know, some of the funnier stuff,
is,
other than the Carson, is the roast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He was the highlight of every single one.
There's some private roasts that are online, too. There's two very unusual ones. One is a Don Adams birthday party that I found when he was 75. And it is hysterical. But there's another one, and it is Milton Berle's funeral. and somebody videotaped it from the Pew or whatever, and the, his opening line was, "These are cheap yarmulkes." and then he's literally talking to Milton while the casket's in front of him. Like,
oh no!
Milton's here because I haven't mentioned his name. He's angry, I'm sure, because I haven't mentioned his name yet or whatever it was. Oh, it's very odd stuff on there, but you can find all kinds of goodies. And then our other one is of Adam West, kind of talking about how he originally thought about playing the character of Batman.
Who decided to play the role of Batman in the series itself a little campier? Was it yourself? Was it William Dozier? Was it kind of a group decision that this is where we were going to take this series?
Well, we shaped the show as a social satire and a tongue-in-cheek comedy, really, for adults. And not for children, you know, they could enjoy all that other stuff. But as you got older, you caught the references and the gags. And I think it was Lorenzo Semple Jr. who wrote those first scripts, and our late executive producer, Bill Dozier, and myself. And we just got together and decided on a tone for the show.
Now, you did the pilot with Frank Gorshin as the Riddler, one of the first villains we'll talk about. Did some of the fans, when the series first came out, did they expect it to be more serious, like Superman and the Lone Ranger, than what was portrayed?
Well, I think it probably did. And among certain people at the studio who didn't understand
right.
what we were doing.
Right.
And it took, several months of just doing our thing to convince them.
Now, the show.
There you go. There's a little bit of Adam West for you there. Wally, always a pleasure, my friend, going through this with you. And we also know there's always going to be loads more by the end of the year. We might have to get back together and podcast the rest of this.
I'm happy to do it.
And watching TV, your book is in what edition now?
It's the third edition, and it covers 8 decades of American television. Go to watchingtv.org for more information. And
it's a great holiday gift as well.
And it's a great holiday gift.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, we'll be right back.